It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The Phileas Club is supported by its patrons on Patreon. You can subscribe as well. Just go to the link that's in the show notes. Subscribe and help. It's a wonderful feeling for everyone. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 103, and we're in January 2018. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is episode 103. We are still in January 2018, and I'm Patrick Beja. And yes, I managed to squeeze one last show before I actually go on paternity leave. It feels like I've been saying this for, like, I don't know, 3 months. Like, this is the last show before I have to take a short break. But guess what? It's week 41 and still no sign of the baby. So I'm going to be podcasting until it actually comes out. And I'm very glad we managed to squeeze one last show before the break, because it gives me an opportunity to have wonderful people again on the show. First of all, Turkey, who I haven't spoken to in a couple of months. I'm very glad you're back. How's it going?
I'm good, Patrick. I'm good. By the way, Manal told me to tell you that in the middle of this recording, your wife is going to tell you, let's get to the hospital.
Yeah. It's very possible. It's actually, we're really close, so it might happen. But you know, that's one of the funny things. I don't know if we discussed it before on this show, but the idea that you have to drop everything and rush to the hospital and the water breaks and, like, an hour later you're pushing like crazy is completely fabricated by the movie industry. And in reality, it takes, well, usually it takes many, many hours, which Allison, who has actually gone through that experience, can tell us whether it's true or not. How's it going, Allison?
Well, everybody's experience is different, but every single person will tell you how it was for them and what you should expect, because everything they say is true.
I mean, clearly it's not the common way that it goes, that you actually, you know, oh my God, water breaks, quick, hospital. And you're afraid it's going to be born in the taxi and everything. Like, it takes hours. No.
My first was 23 hours and 45 minutes, so there was a little bit of time.
And at first, it's like contractions, you know, an hour apart or something, and, you know, it takes hours for it to become, like, super. Of course, it's different for everyone, but.
So you're telling me you want to take the chance?
Well, the thing is, I mean, at least that's how it's been happening here in Finland. They encourage you to not go to the hospital until it's really the last moment. Because if you do, you're just going to be sitting in a room where you're not comfortable in the hospital waiting for things to happen. And it's going to take possibly 10 hours or 20 hours. So,
yeah, the only exception is if the water breaks, boom, you go in, because the chances of infection get really high if you just sit around for that.
Oh, actually, they've told us the sign is when you get contractions 5 minutes apart that last for 1 minute, for 2 hours. And before that, you don't even go, including
Except if
the
water breaks.
No, even if the water breaks.
Oh, come on. Well, I don't think infections have changed in the 30 years since I had a baby. is this show this week in baby talk? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, no, it's an interesting cultural difference, because the rate of issues in Finland is lower than in the US. And there are weird things. Like, apparently in the US, it's very common to recommend a C-section, even when it's not necessary, or when it's not absolutely necessary. Here, they really keep it as a last resort if really nothing's going well. Like, 41, maybe even, they start inducing after 41 weeks. And even then, they try to wait up to 42. So I don't know. It happens differently, but I think it's pretty well known, and I'm sure some people will contradict me in the comments. It's pretty well accepted outside of the U.S. that the U.S. does way too many C-sections. At least that's, you know, what I understand. But I don't know.
Maybe that would get us into a whole healthcare discussion of, in our case, a bunch of people make money if you get a C-section.
Do you want me to invite my wife into this conversation? She's the doctor.
Yeah, but maybe we could use some actual expert opinion. You know, at some point, we are going to have a conversation about the experience of going through pregnancy and childbirth in different countries. I think that will be an interesting one. So we'll keep it for another time, but definitely. So, of course, for the people who are joining us for the first time, they might not know who you both are. Turkey is from Saudi Arabia. So it's 6 p.m. for me. It must be 7 p.m. for you, right?
Yep.
And exactly. Allison, you are from the West Coast of the United States of America. So it's early, bright and early in the morning for you.
Yeah, it is. I didn't go on my morning run just for you.
Oh, I'm really flattered. Thank you very much. Will you go afterwards, though? Or?
Yeah, I might do a speed walk instead and drag the dog along. You never know.
All right. So, of course, this is the show where we cover the news from around the world. We get people, as we mentioned, from different countries and different cultures and different backgrounds. And we talk about the things that have been happening in each of our countries and kind of discuss what we think from where we stand and from the different places we're from. So hopefully you get varying opinions on the world news. At least that's what we aim for. I guess, not breaking tradition, I'm going to start. And uncharacteristically, I'm not going to talk about things happening in France because I've been a little bit busy with other things, you know. I've had other things on my mind. But I don't think a lot of interesting things have been happening in France. So instead, I'm going to talk a little bit about the presidential election happening in Finland right now. And there are two things that I think are going to be interesting to the international audience. First is the way it happens. And second is the context around it and who is probably going to be elected. The way it happens is, well, first of all, the president is not a very powerful figure of state in Finland. He's more of a Germany type government organization. So the one that really heads the government is the prime minister. The president is more of a representation role, that kind of thing. But for the way the elections have been happening is that there is a date for the election, which must be about a week away now. But people start voting 2 weeks before that, and they can vote in any post office. Maybe there are other places, I'm not sure, but at least in any post office, you can go and cast your vote in advance, and anyone can do it. Initially, my wife was doing it, and I thought it was because, you know, we were in France and the registration was different. But actually, anyone can do that. So it's really interesting to see that they're facilitating the vote in that way, and that it's actually not a big deal, and that's just the way the organization of the elections is done.
So Patrick, you're saying what's interesting about that is that they make it so easy to vote that it's not like you have to go to a specific spot. You can go to any post office.
Yeah, maybe not any, but pretty much from what I understand, we just walked into a post office. There were voting booths in there and personnel that was trained for it. They check your ID and as they would in any voting office. And you just cast your vote and you're done. And in France, you know, we often talk about how easy it should be to vote. In France, I thought we were making it pretty easy. We always have the voting day on Sundays, which I think is a no-brainer. I know in the US it's a Tuesday, which blows my mind. I don't understand why that's the case. But here,
well,
it's even better.
It's okay if it's a Tuesday if they give them a holiday.
Well, which obviously they
don't. But they don't.
Yeah. And so here, it's not even one day. Technically, there is one day, but then you just can vote 2 weeks before, and many people do that. So it was very surprising. I think it's, you know, there's no reason not to. I mean, I'm sure you could find reasons not to do it, But I think the benefits far, far outweigh the inconveniences.
I would guess that there's a suggestion that if you restrict the access and the ways that you can do it, that perhaps you can better control against fraud, or, you know, people take it more seriously or something. I'm sure there's some excuse along those lines, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I can imagine that would be the case. And maybe it's easier to organize in a country that has 5 million people rather than, you know, 150. So sure, I'm sure there are some of those elements as well. But thought it would, that was unexpected, I guess.
Don't in Finland, doesn't everybody have an ID?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, so the US don't have that.
I know, yeah.
Well, technically we do.
I mean, technically, but it's not an official ID by the federal government, is it?
Yeah, well, we've got a social security number that defines us.
Right, but you don't have a document, a piece of paper. Yeah. Not everyone has a photo ID with them, right?
Yeah, you have to show a photo ID in order to vote. Right.
But
I thought that we were talking in the context. But by the way, we have 323 million, not 150 million.
Well, yeah, okay.
People.
Slight difference, minor detail.
I wasn't going to correct you, that I thought, well, that
no,
doesn't
no, no,
sound.
No, you're right. But wait, I thought there was an issue with some people requiring, saying that they should be required, the photo IDs, to vote. And some people are saying that they shouldn't, because many people don't have photo IDs in the U.S. And that was an issue.
Now, I remember there was something about that during the last election but I mean, you have to be able to prove who you are, it would seem to me.
Maybe I'm missing
an important point there.
To me, that is obvious. And every time I've heard that argument, you know, if you place me on the left side of the argument when I say, well, of course it should be a Sunday and of course it should be made as easy as possible to vote, then you would place me on the right side of the argument for the photo ID thing, because to me it sounds inconceivable that you wouldn't have a photo ID that you wouldn't require a photo ID in order to vote. It makes no sense. So maybe it's already the case, but anyway, that was just the organization of it. But the other thing is, the current president is probably going to be reelected, and the projections are about 80 to 85% of the votes are going to go to him, and that is not something.
For his dog?
I think the dog has a little bit to do with it. He has a very ugly dog that the country adores, apparently. He has a much younger wife than he is, and everyone find the whole thing endearing and amusing. But the even more important thing, there are a few people who are unhappy with him because of some... He's originally from the right-wing party, meaning the conservatives, but he's not even running in the name of his party, just to make sure that he doesn't alienate the other guy's voters. And he's done such a great job over the past 6 years that it's pretty much certain that he's going to be reelected. And the way he's done a great job has been... he's been very adult about things. He's sort of positioning himself as the adult in the conversation when some others are a little bit more politician and trying to, you know, milk controversies and stuff like that. Although, keep in mind, in Finland, when you're trying to milk a controversy, it's still very much a reasonable conversation with, you know, clever people saying clever things for most of the time. The one thing that will stand out, I think, to people outside the country is the way he's been handling Russia. Basically, the job of the president in Finland is to make sure that Russia is friendly, but at the same time kept at bay. He's had a very interesting relationship with the country, and it's sort of the cleverness of the language he uses and the way he discusses things. You know, making sure that Russia doesn't have cause to be upset is a very, I don't know, it's really interesting. And it's dealing with the reality of that neighbor in a way that is really different from how you talk or think about Russia when you're a few hundred kilometers or a few thousand kilometers away. So yeah, Sauli Niinistö is probably going to be reelected, and reelected with numbers that are going to make one of the issues is it's possible he's going to get numbers higher than Putin's in the upcoming election in Russia. And so that's a little bit like, at the same time, I guess Putin is going to be able to say, well, see, some other democratic countries also get numbers like those. So it's fine. It's fine. Right.
So mine's really democratic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It proves everything. So
how does that prove when the president doesn't even have any powers?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not common that the president gets, it's still a serious election. You know, it's not like you vote for whatever. It's usually, my understanding is that the president doesn't get 80%, and it's not no powers. It's just less powers than the prime minister. It's more international stuff, so.
And plus, what's the big deal? We have presidents in this region that get 99%.
Exactly.
You're saying that the president's job is only to deal with Russia?
Well, not really. It's like representation and international relationships, you know, as they do in Germany, more or less. But obviously, the importance of Russia in the, you know, geography of the country means that it's funny because...
It takes a front seat.
Right, yeah. And we are very much in the zone of influence of Russia. You know, they have that concept of, well, Russia is Russia, but then we have like Ukraine, Belarus, like Finland to an extent, and all of those neighboring countries that are, it's not inside the house, but it's kind of our lawn. So we can kind of do whatever we want. Not exactly, but yeah. And so Finland is part of the EU, but at the same time, part of that zone of influence. And it's the buffer between Russia and the rest of Europe through Sweden. And, you know, the president is being all diplomatic. And at the same time, the government is buying, you know, tons and tons of fighter planes to make sure that if Russia, you know, once Crimea has happened, the government got rightfully so a little bit not panicked, but thought we should make sure we're prepared. And the policy of Finland is apparently, obviously, you're not going to beat the Russian army. But if you can make it hurt enough, then they're going to think twice before coming into the country. And that's what they do. There is a fringe of, well, a part of the population here that is very NATO, pro-NATO. And there are a lot of people who are saying, we should absolutely join NATO and make sure that Russia gets the message, which, in my opinion, it's completely unrealistic. It's like, if Finland joins NATO, at that point, Russia is like, what the hell are you doing? You're making an... Anyway, it's a little bit of a wider conversation, but the president is never going to agree to that line of thinking, and the government is mostly not, but some people are very much taking the hard line against Russia. And I think that's an unrealistic way of looking at the issues in the region. But yeah. So fun in Finland presidential election. So I guess we can move on to the US of A. I'm sure you've had a lot of fun in the past month with what's been happening.
I want to set a little bit of expectation to the audience. When I first started listening to Phileas Club, you know, any podcast I listen to, I figure, wow, I'd be a great guest for that. But my first reaction to Patrick was, I don't know anything about politics. I don't really pay attention to politics. And I know it's not just politics, it's news. But one of the odd benefits of the current administration in the United States is that normal people who would never pay any attention to the government are paying a lot of attention now. And my husband Steve and I are both retired, and we sort of mainline CNN now, and listen to other networks as well. But we listen to a lot of news, so we kind of know what's happening on a minute by minute basis. And all of a sudden, I'm understanding a whole lot more about my government than I ever did before. So I am not an expert in the field of government, law, politics at all. That isn't where I'm coming from. I'm coming as a normal person who's studying what's going on and starting to learn and what it means.
Well, it's good that you're making that that noting it, because as you know, on the show we are all absolute experts about everything concerning politics, right? So you're going to stick out a little bit, but you know, now that you've said
we just covered the whole baby thing. I mean, we got that down. Right? I do want to jump back to the voter ID thing, because I looked it up. Apparently, IDs are not required in all states. A lot of states don't, and they didn't even start making it a condition till like 2006. So, and one of the things they're saying is that the kind of voter fraud that does exist is very, very small, and it wouldn't be solved by IDs anyway. And it is disenfranchising. Yeah. They're saying the assumption is that it's disenfranchising to minority groups.
Which, yeah, I understand. And clearly there aren't any, in spite of what some people in your government are saying, there is no voter fraud. No significant voter fraud in the country. It's been studied many times. So I guess it's me being very European and saying, oh, that's the way it's done. But if there's no fraud, there's no real reason to be. It's some other changing. Things are more of a concern. But yeah, it's just it's so obvious to us that you need a voter ID. But a photo ID. But yeah.
So the other thing in terms of background I wanted to give you is that I was born and raised a Republican. My parents were Republican. I was a Republican. I dated a guy who was a Democrat in college. And my father had told me I could marry anybody I wanted as long as they weren't a Democrat and didn't ride a motorcycle. He later on added, and they have to have a sense of humor. Those were his only three requirements.
Okay.
Anyway, I've been a Republican my whole life, and I did not vote Democrat until Obama came along, and I voted for him both times. And this year I stayed registered Republican, because in the United States, when you if you can only vote in the primary election for the party to which you're pledged, if you will. So by being a Republican, I could vote for anyone on the ticket other than Trump. And that's what I did. Mm. I went out of my way to stay Republican for that reason. And now I'm just staying there just out of arbitrariness to see what's going to happen.
So, before we talk about the news, maybe you can tell us about, your thoughts over the last 15 years about that, not transition, but the way you felt evolution. About the both parties. Yeah, evolutions. The way you felt about both party being a lifelong Republican, as you said. Since you didn't vote for Trump, I'm guessing you're not super happy, but still, it's an interesting view on the matter.
Yeah, I like to think of myself, if not everyone, as a work in progress from a self-awareness perspective. I grew up a rich white girl, right? So my family was Republican, because everything that was good for investments and for for rich people, that was where I went. But the biggest thing I look at now is that over time, it never occurred to me as a naive person that the parties would move. I thought once I was a Republican, if I was a Republican and the Republicans believed A, B, and C, that they would continue to believe A, B, and C. It just never occurred to me until this year or this past year that the party would so dramatically change what they believed in and what was important to them. And so,
you think the party has changed what they believed in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't believe people are more vocally white supremacists now. Maybe they always were and they were in that party. You've got a lot more discussion of religion. That was not, I could have sworn the country was based on freedom of religion. I'm almost positive that was one of the reasons we started this here country, mm-hmm. was to escape religious persecution. And so what do you mean we all have to be Christians and we have to be your kind of Christian to be, in the in crowd? What does that even have to do with it? There was that whole separation of church and state thing. I remember reading about that in high school, right? And so now we're sitting around talking about whether you're an evangelical or not. And I don't even understand why that's part of the conversation. That wasn't in the list of things Republicans were about, I don't think. Or maybe I wasn't paying attention. I don't know.
Mm. And so, so that, that that shift is what pushed you towards a more democratic, I don't want even want to say view, but more of a Democrat slant? Or?
Yeah. I mean, again, becoming more socially aware, being able to look at myself and say, okay, so all of your experiences are as a rich white girl. What are you missing that you don't understand? I think my first moment of self-awareness was actually the results of the OJ trial. I was in a room full of people listening to the radio, if you will. I worked for a company where we couldn't have TVs inside. So we're listening to the radio, and the people assembled, everyone was white except for one guy. And he was black and or non-black in the room. And anyway, when the results came through, we every single person in that room went, "What?" Except for that one black guy who went, "Yes." And it was a moment that I realized that I don't understand. I didn't look down on him. I looked at, oh my gosh, what has his life experience been that he thought that was the right answer? You know, how different is his world from mine? And it opened up conversations. It got very interesting.
Just to make it clear, I think some of our listeners that aren't American won't know exactly what happened during the O.J. Simpson trial.
So O.J. Simpson was accused of murdering his wife and another man, and he was found not guilty. And every white friend of mine believed beyond any shadow of any doubt whatsoever, even though the cops were probably corrupt in what they did, believed that he did it. And but we didn't grow up in a world like my black friend did, that where, you know, he would constantly weird stuff happen to him because of the way the cops would treat him just because he was black. And I've started to listen more to conversations about that. I listen to the SMR podcast, which is a fantastic tech podcast that also talks about social issues in the country. And listening to Rob Dunwood talk about how he's been stopped by the police. I'm talking like once a month he is stopped. He is a well-dressed gentleman, wears fancy suits. He's got an expensive watch. He drives a Cadillac Escalade. He has a real business job. You know, he's a smart guy. I mean, he's not doing anything to cause himself to get pulled over. And he gets pulled over once a month. And the first thing that he does when he gets pulled over is he calls his wife to tell her that he loves her. And, you know, you start realizing you really don't understand what other people's worlds are like. And that makes me look more at the Democrat side, where maybe I do have to care about people who don't have as much money as I did, people who can't afford health insurance. You know, listening to you has just ruined all kinds of stuff for me from a health insurance perspective. I paid $1,100 for two pairs of glasses, one of which was under insurance. And I realized, what would I do if I didn't have insurance? Yeah, I wouldn't be able to see. If I can't see, maybe I can't get a job.
So
you've ruined everything.
it's your fault, Patrick. We blame you.
I'm very sorry, or maybe I'm not. What do your Republican, because to me, what you're saying now, from what I know of the political makeup of the US now, Republicans would look at you and sort of not even necessarily be angry, but even more importantly, I think dismiss you as a Democrat. So obviously that's what you think because you're a Democrat now or whatever. It doesn't even matter. Do you have friends? I mean, you're in California, so obviously you're in hippie city. But do you have friends that are Republicans that you butt heads with? Or like, how's it going with people who...
I don't really. I know three people, one relative, two friends, who did not vote because they hated Hillary. Mm. And, you know, which was essentially a vote for Donald Trump. And I've just not really talked to them about that. You know, I want to say, see what you did? Huh? Huh? See what you did? But, you know, of course, California went for Hillary anyway. Mm. But I'm sure there's people like them in other states where it wasn't that they wanted Donald Trump. They just didn't want Hillary. And so they didn't vote. And that, you know, half as many, my understanding, if I have the statistic right, is that half as many Democrats showed up to vote in the most recent election as did in the Obama one.
The Obama one. Yeah, you cut off for a second. Yeah.
Sorry, okay. Yeah, it's the Obama one. So And I have never been able to get anyone to articulate what they didn't like about Hillary. I remember asking one person, I said, oh, I'm really interested. You know, what is it you don't like about Hillary? Because, you know, I really want to understand. And she said, well, I hate her. I said, yeah, but what about her do you hate her? I hate her. And that was this art. And it was one of those things where you could tell, yeah, I'm not going to get anywhere here. So
of course, you're not going to get anywhere. I hate her.
Why?
Seriously, I do. I don't know. I just can't stand that woman.
Okay.
Interesting.
So you're serious or you're turkey?
Yeah, no, I'm serious.
Okay.
I'm serious. If I was an American citizen and I had to go vote, I might have just never voted.
And you
was something about her that I just couldn't take.
Just like you wouldn't want to sit down and have drinks with her, so you can't vote for her?
I don't know exactly. I'm just telling you because I know exactly how those people are feeling because I felt the same thing.
That's interesting,
really,
though. Yeah.
Really interesting. Yeah.
And you don't know why.
I don't know exactly why. There's
all of the criticism we hear about constantly, which you can mention. The war hawk.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, it's something about her that I just couldn't stand.
Mm. Okay. I mean, to be fair, you also can't stand Donald Trump. So I don't know what you would have done.
It's a different Donald Trump. I can give you a complete list in details of why I can't stand him.
Right. I guess that's fair. Okay. So anything else on that?
I did want to talk about, we had a government shutdown this last week.
Of course. Yeah.
And in the United States, a government shutdown doesn't mean the government stops doing anything. It does affect several hundred thousand employees, but it doesn't stop everything. It stops things like the national parks. One of the most interesting things is that the members of Congress that caused this shutdown, they don't stop getting paid. And I've been screaming at my TV every time there's been a shutdown. Why aren't they asking that question? And this week, one of the interviewers did ask the question and they're like, oh, well, you know, it's just not the way it's written. It's like, no, I think if there's a government shutdown, you shouldn't get paid either. I mean, that just doesn't seem like the right way to go.
Yeah.
What was significant about this particular shutdown,
and
it was,
by the way, they should get the kind of healthcare that other people get as well.
Yeah,
Anyway, let's not. Sorry, I apologize.
I think that's an interesting point. I worked in a company where we outsourced our computing support, and I was in the engineering computing side of it. And they, because I was a big fat manager, they offered me to have like a special hotline where I would get faster service than anybody else. And I was like, no, I think I should know what it's really like. But why would you let me? And plus, I'm a manager. How important is my job? How about the person actually making the product? Maybe they ought to be the ones with the quick support. But anyway, the thing that was most significant about this shutdown is it's the first time there's ever been a government shutdown when both the House and the Senate, and by the way, the president, were all in the same party. That has never happened before. So the full control is supposedly by the Republicans, and yet they couldn't bring this to pass. So the thing they wanted to do was the Republicans wanted was a continuing resolution, which basically says, let's fund the government for 2 weeks or a week or 5 days or whatever. And it's basically a way of saying, well, we couldn't get our act together, so let's just delay the decision. And the Democrats refused that. And that the main thing they wanted to do was to pressure the Republicans to ensure that the DACA kids are protected. And I'm not sure if that's been discussed in here, but it's called the Dreamer Act. I think it was put in place by Obama. It's children of illegal immigrants that were brought here with, you know, through no fault of their own and have been living here for a while. And one of the things that the DACA program put in place was a lot of restrictions on these children, or requirements, I should say, that they had to be registered as DACA. They had to be, you know, you had to tell the government where you lived and everything. And now the people who are crazy about immigration want to undo that. And now these are people who then, you know, gave their home address and home information and contact information to the government and registered in good faith. And then you're going to turn around and go, okay, good. Now we know where you live so we can deport you. You know, the strange thing is something like, I don't know, more than 75% of people in the United States in polls want the DACA kids protected. So the Democrats had that in their pocket, but they tried to hold that hostage and did not succeed. And it ended up, they ended up agreeing to a continuing resolution after all. And I just use the word hostage on purpose, because one of the things I wanted to highlight was how much better the Republicans are at name calling. They are truly, truly gifted, and they have learned from the master. I mean, how many times have you heard the phrase crooked Hillary, right? You start saying something like that often enough, you know, socialist Patrick, except it doesn't have alliteration. You know, you say that often enough, then your first thought when you think of Patrick is he's a socialist, right?
Which and I take as a compliment, by the way. So thank you.
No. It's a dirty socialist.
Oh, sorry. Dirty socialist, Patrick. But they're so good at this. They did things like Chuck Schumer is the Senate minority leader. So he's the head of the Democrats, the senior Democrat. And they started calling it the Schumer shutdown. Well, that alliteration is beautiful. Schumer shutdown, Schumer shutdown. Oh, man, the Democrats did it. It's all the Democrats. Well, wait a minute. Republicans control everything and yet couldn't push this through. And it was the fault of the Democrats that it happened.
Why is it that the Republicans can't push it through if they control everything? Do they need more than the majority for one of the chambers?
Well, they need 60 votes. And I think they're like 51-49 right now. So if you got all of the Republicans to vote, they still wouldn't get it. Right.
And it's the Senate that votes, I guess? Or maybe it's what they need for the Senate. And
I have lost track of when it's the Senate and when it's the House. Mm.
Okay.
I keep thinking I should draw
60 votes is the Senate. Definitely.
Yeah, it's the Senate that has 100 seats. Right. I mean, I understand
you guys are telling me.
But I mean, I understand that the Republicans hold everything, and I really think it's a Republican shutdown. It's not a Democrat shutdown, as I've seen, you know, on Twitter, the hashtag and stuff like that. But they still need the Democrats to agree to whatever their decision is, at least in the Senate. So if the Democrats don't, I mean, I don't know that you can say it's a Democrat shutdown, obviously, but the Democrats...
It's really a government shutdown.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
both, right?
Yeah, obviously, it's the government that is shutting things down, clearly. And it's because they aren't managing to get... it's not even getting their act together. It's they're not agreeing.
Well, and let's throw a little monkey wrench in there. Let's remember that the president gets involved in this. So, from what I understand, and there seems to be debate on this topic, the president met with Chuck Schumer, on the Friday before the shutdown was going to take place, and they came to an agreement. And 2 hours later, there was a call back to Chuck Schumer saying, no, that deal's off the table. And so Chuck Schumer's famous line is that he said negotiating with the president is like negotiating with Jell-O. So having what he thought was an agreement. And in fact, so another big contention is that the president wants to build this ridiculous wall. I just think it's a giant waste of money. But, you know, that's my point of view. But anyway, so there's this wall he wants to have built, and he wants a physical wall to be built. And so Chuck Schumer had put it on the table to say, yes, I would agree to funding of the wall. And after the president backed out and after the Democrats came back and said, OK, we will agree to the continuing resolution, Chuck Schumer has now said, yeah, that thing about the wall, that's off the table. And I'm sure they're going to make the Democrats look like, oh, look, they didn't negotiate in good faith because he did that. But, you know, if I give you an offer and you refuse that offer, that offer's off the table in any other negotiation. Right.
I think
it would seem to me.
Yeah. The thing that strikes me the most, which there are so many of those now, it's kind of ridiculous to even point them out. The thing that strikes me the most is how Trump came in saying, you know, I'm super good at negotiating and I'm going to run the government like
deals.
I run my companies. And I mean, clearly he is running his government like he is running his companies, which means not very efficient.
Yeah, and he's going to bankrupt the country just like he bankrupted his business 10 but, times. I think.
Yeah, but I mean... this is yet another example of I don't think the Trump presidency is the end of the world. And I think it's a bad presidency, but I don't think like many...
If he presses that red button, it is the end of the
world.
Well,
yeah, we'll see if that actually happens. And then I'll eat my... Yeah, his button is clearly bigger, but it's, you know, it's compensate for his small hands. But I really don't think the Trump government is the end of the world. I do think it's a bad government. And I do think that it's very frustrating. You're, as you were saying, a lifelong Republican. Well, clearly not, since you voted for Obama, but you were for a good portion of your life a Republican. And what is really frustrating is how much some of the Republicans are accepting because of whatever one issue they care about. And we've talked about this with Tony a few times. His one issue is the abortion problem, which he's very attached to. He considers, unborn fetuses to be life, and he's very worried about the abortions, which I disagree with, but I can understand. But the defense of the president and the administration seems to be predicated on, well, we're going to defend them because there's this one thing we care about. And it's really what we were talking about a few months, maybe a year ago already. How far do you go? How much do you accept in order to protect that one thing that you care about? And that's really what bothers me deep down.
Yeah, I started having a conversation with a gentleman on Twitter who is a conservative who voted for Trump, and he and I have managed to have a civil conversation every single time. And it's been really interesting, and I keep telling him I appreciate that we're not yelling at each other, we're discussing ideas, and he's the only person I've found like this. And most interesting, no one else is trolling our conversation. It's all been public, it's not been DMs, and nobody's jumping in and saying one of us is right or wrong, which is also interesting. But I hit the wall with him when the president referred to all of the African continent as shithole countries. And excuse my French, but I am quoting the president of the United States, and I should say, excuse my
there
French,
is,
Patrick.
There is a debate on whether or not he said those exact words, but yeah. I felt I should mention it because,
Yeah, well, we'll say S-hole. There appears to be a different word that starts with S that, or no.
Okay.
It was S something else. Anyway, but I couldn't get him to say that he was embarrassed or that was a horrible thing to say. And it just really bothered me that he couldn't. The farthest he would go was dumb, not racist. President is not a racist because he has hired black people. You know, it's just, I've told him I was too sad to talk to him for a while because it just really, like what you're saying, how can you put all of this other stuff aside when there's one fundamental belief that you have? You do have to throw that out. You know, I don't see how so much wrong can justify one thing you see as right.
I think that what they would tell us, and I know, you know, it doesn't really matter that we don't have someone from that camp today, because they've told us many times, and I know that's what they would tell us, is the reason he thinks that was just dumb is that he actually thinks Donald Trump is just dumb, but he's not actually racist. And he's not, you know, it's not as big of a drama as Democrats make it up to be, because it isn't about racism. That could be argued,
I would say beyond that, if, let's say the president isn't racist, let's say he's just dumb, putting him a little higher than I would. If we say he's just dumb, what he's doing though is he's speaking to his base that is racist, that is white supremacist, that are people that want to put walls around everything and let no immigrants in, and which is just ridiculous, since pretty much all of us are immigrants or children of immigrants in some way, unless your relatives go all the way back, you probably are.
Unless you're Native American, which the name implies you're native, yes, to an extent.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning. So he is speaking to those people who do believe that and getting encouragement from those people who believe that. And that's what's really terrifying. One of the things that's starting to come out, and there hasn't been proof of this, but when Chuck Schumer and the president met and then 2 hours later, he changed his mind. There's a guy named Stephen Miller, who's a White House aide, who has very anti-immigration thoughts. And they believe that he influenced the president in that 2 hours and stopped those negotiations. And if you start watching Stephen Miller and what he believes in, he's a pretty terrifying guy. And the fact that the president has surrounded himself by people who are racist and anti-immigration, it almost doesn't matter whether the president believes it or not. I'm not convinced the president has any firm beliefs either way. I'm convinced that he's just doing whatever he feels like on a whim, you know, some days. So that influence is terrifying, and it's really starting to affect things. But in a rare moment of optimism, I unlike you, do think this is the end of the world. But we're starting to see moderate Democrats and Republicans starting to get together. Nancy Pelosi and Lindsey Graham. Nancy Pelosi is a Democrat. Lindsey Graham's a Republican. Lindsey Graham is speaking out against the president. When he says things that he doesn't think he should be saying, he says so. And what I don't understand is why more Republicans don't do that. You know, to say love of party over this guy saying ridiculous things and doing ridiculous things, I couldn't morally look myself in the eye every morning and say I was serving the country and just put that stuff aside. So I'm starting to respect Lindsey Graham for that.
I think the current parties are just broken. You need new parties.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there is a third party next time around. I've heard talk of that, but maybe they're both wrong.
There's I don't know that they're both wrong, but the system is clearly too divided, and I think it's ripe for disruption. but we'll see if someone ends up trying to do something about it. I will say, however, to bring a little bit of optimism in the conversation, have you heard about that? Friends controversy from a couple of weeks ago?
The word broke up. The what controversy?
The Friends controversy, the TV show Friends.
No.
Actually, we heard about it in France. I'm not sure many in the US heard about it, but it was definitely the case in the US as well. What happened was that Friends was available again on Netflix, and a bunch of millennials watched it and thought it was it was making them very uncomfortable in different ways, mostly because of its sort of soft racism and soft anti-gay elements and soft. I think it's exaggerated in some respects, but I also think that it's actually a good thing that people are. You know, there's the portion where Monica is made fun of because she was fat. So this is like anti-fat agenda or whatever. It's not really. It's the fact that what brings me hope is, and of course, you had a lot of people saying, oh, my God, there you go again. Social justice warriors. You can't say anything these days. Like it was just Friends is fine. And it's not a problem. It's not racist. Obviously, it's not racist. How could you say that Friends is racist? You know, the fact is, in Friends, you have a lot of white people and never, there's like two characters that are black in Friends. And the fact that we notice this now, and the fact that some people think it's a little bit, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not mean, it doesn't mean that Friends is a horrible show. It's just, it's interesting how this doesn't, we probably would include a couple of non-white characters in that cast, or as a side character at least, in that show, because it's a little bit weird to be doing it like this. The fact that we're getting to that sentiment is showing that over 20 years, things do evolve in a positive manner. We do become inclusive. More.
I was just looking up the date. 1994 is when that show started. I think I said things differently 24, 25 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And but the fact that we who grew up in a world where Friends was completely normal and acceptable, it wasn't even an issue. And it's not a condemnation of who we are as people that we liked Friends at the time. It's just how things were done. But the fact that we look at this and we see people condemning it and we say, what are you talking about? It's fine. You know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of that those family reunions where you have that slightly racist uncle that says stuff, or grandparent that says stuff that everyone goes like, oh my God, there goes again, you know, there he goes again. There Stan goes again. I don't know why Stan. I love you, Stan. I'm not talking about you specifically, but you know, and it's like you have the things that you're like, oh, it's fine. He's a different generation. You know,
it's funny you would pick the show or that Friends is the one that's got that problem, because I watch a lot of other shows that you look back just going, oh, man, you can't. I mean, watch I Love Lucy, you know.
Well, I think Friends is more recent. You know, it's our like I'm 40. It's my generation's show in a way. It's one of the emblematic shows from that time.
Well, so. me too, but I actually am trying to hold back to I want to defend Friends to say, well, wait a minute, they had the episode where Chandler fell in love with her even though she was fat, and then there was the you know, Phoebe's husband was gay and that turned out to be okay and they did deal with that issue. So, yeah.
And Ross's wife is gay and she has great relationship with her wife, and that's fine as well, of course. I mean, Friends is not the greatest offender in the world. Yeah. I think mostly it's the black thing that is a little bit uncomfortable, because living in New York, having a group of friends, and there's never a black person around,
it feels like... Yeah, when you said that, I was going, oh, but what about... Hey, wait a minute. You're right. There wasn't anybody black.
Well,
that.
Ross has a black girlfriend at some point during the show.
Yeah, and she's a physicist, so...
Should we okay reverse it, that there were shows that were all black and no white people in them?
I think that's a different... there are shows that are specifically targeted at the black audiences. And then you get into the, if they can do it, then we can do it too. But that's not the way it works. And that's always the conversations we get into about racism and sexism. It's directed towards a minority. And if it's not about the minority, then I think it's not the same issue. But
Right. I did want to add one more thing about what went on during the shutdown. And this was the weirdest thing. President Trump's re-election campaign produced an ad during the shutdown that said, because the Democrats were against the wall and wanting to help the DACA residents, that if any immigrant commits a murder, the Democrats are complicit in those murders.
Okay.
I mean, the most unproductive thing you could possibly have done. And that, you know, that it was just like, what are you doing? Why? Jeez. I mean, it's so much childishness and the name calling that just it's not becoming of the office of the president. And I put down three things I want in a president. I want a
president. Does he know the elections are still 3 years away?
Well, but the Republicans are coming up for midterm elections this year in November, and that's where they're hopefully going to lose control of the Senate and the House. And so they're trying to do a lot to make the Democrats look bad right now. That's what's really going on. But I wanted to end my monologue with the three things I want in a president. I want a president who can speak in complete sentences and use three syllable words. Okay, I want one that doesn't do name calling, and I want one not surrounded by white supremacists. That's all I want. That's all I'm asking for.
Seems pretty reasonable, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah, that three syllable word apparently seems to be the hardest part for him.
All right. I do want to add one little thing, just because we don't have a lot of the other side of the debate represented. I do want to mention, just for them, the issue with the photo of Trump at his desk. Did you see that?
No, what's the story with that?
Yeah, the one that they looked like an idiot?
Yes. They produced a photo of him working at his desk in the Oval Office, and the desk was completely empty. And there was a phone and he had his Make America Great Again hat, and he was just, you know, talking on the phone or pretending to talk on the phone, and the desk was empty. And that was an official White House, you know, press department picture, and it was posted on Twitter, and everyone, well, not everyone, but a lot of people started saying, oh, how can you even do this? Like, this is, this looks so dumb. Do you know anyone that works like this? And it's so ridiculous. And I even jumped on the bandwagon. I think I was a little bit less dismissive of it. I was thinking, I think they do this on purpose. The desk is so empty, it's to rile up the Democrats and to increase the sort of divide, because they're going to say this and then they're going to appear more belligerent. That was my theory. And very quickly, someone posted, someone from Europe, actually, they don't have a dog in the race. I think it was Michael, friend of the show. He posted a picture of Obama in exactly the same pause, like with the empty desk.
What a ridiculous conversation he had.
Not the same pause, for one.
Well, he was standing instead of sitting.
He was behind the desk. Was empty. Like an elegant guy. That like looked like
but
a moron.
But the desk was empty, Turkey.
I never even looked at the desk. When I saw the pictures, I never even cared about whether the desk was empty or not.
The tweets I saw were talking about the fact that he was an idiot because his desk was empty and no one works like this. And the fact
every
that
every president has a photo with an empty desk. Go look through all the photos.
Yeah, always
seen, I've always seen the president with an empty desk. That wasn't surprise me at all.
I guess maybe I follow the wrong people because, actually it wasn't even people I followed. It was like retweets and stuff, but it was for a hot minute. It was a thing. And people were very prompt to express their you know, scorn for the president in that picture. And I guess what I'm trying to say is maybe we should save it for when it matters. That's
hey, Patrick, a really smart guy I know said that what the problem we have right now is we're going from to outrage of 10 immediately, where maybe 10 should be reserved for nuclear war and and one should be a paper cut.
Well, that's exactly my point. That's the point I was making.
I know it was you who said that.
No, but that's, I know, but that's the point I was making in this conversation. It was like, just a photo of Trump with an empty desk. Not only does it not deserve this, but every president has it. So anyway.
I would like to pull what you said out as a soundbite and just play it once a day to myself and if not others, because it really, really struck me. You are spot on that, you know, my internet's down for 15 seconds. Well, I'm going to go on Twitter and complain about this, you know, and I am as bad as anybody else. I'm not going to point fingers at anybody because I'm terrible about that. But I've started to think about it because of what you said. I've started to think, hey, wait a minute. Is this really a 10? You know, maybe this is only a 6 and I can mellow out a little bit. You know, this is not nuclear war.
I think that is makes the entirety of the existence of this show worth it. Thank you very much, Allison. Turkey, anything you want to add? Anything you want to add about, I don't know, the government shutdown or this conversation in general?
I'm just worried. Your head is big enough. Allison shouldn't be any bigger.
No, I'm just talking about the U.S., like what's being told about that in I was going to say in Germany, in Saudi Arabia.
Not much about that. It's just normal news, government shutdown and everything. I think we're more busy with all the changes in Saudi.
Okay, so tell us about that.
Well, let's see. It's 2018. Saudis now pay taxes. Their gasoline went up by almost double in price. Electricity went up. No, we had zero taxes.
State, federal,
nothing.
Income.
Nothing.
Well, the government gets the oil money, right? And that's the deal you made. You're like, you get the oil money and you take care of everything.
Exactly. Okay. And in January 1st, the government has issued the VAT tax, value-added tax, a sales tax similar to sales tax in some countries. And it's a 5%, it's low, but that's the start. And on January 1st, also, we have in Saudi, we have two types of petrol, 91 and a 95. The 91 went up by 80% and 95 went up by 120%.
Wow.
And so I'm guessing people aren't happy, but it's happening anyway.
No, people are like, because this resulted in everything going up in prices. Because, and we also have a new policy right now. We have a lot of expats working here, especially in whether they're in professional level or laborers. And now we have a policy that for every individual who an expat working in Saudi, they have to, their employer has to pay around 300 Saudi riyals a month for each employee to the government. And if they have a family members, each member of their family has to pay 200 riyals a month.
Is that a lot of money or?
If you add it up to, let's say $100 is around 375 riyals.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you get all of these expenses going up and prices are going up like crazy at the moment. Because the cost of these businesses, the cost has increased because suddenly now they have to pay a lot of money for their employees. They pay a lot of money for the electricity. They pay a lot of money now for gasoline. They also pay the VAT on their products when they buy them. So it's kind of interesting right now in Saudi. It's not only Saudi. VAT has been also introduced in the UAE. And UAE also never had any type of tax at all. So that's their first tax as well.
So I'm guessing all of this, I mean, it's happening because the governments are being responsible and preparing for the oil money to run out, right?
Yeah, you can say that. It's one of the reasons. Most of these movements, they started when the oil crashed and went down to almost, I think, around $20 a barrel. It's up now up to $60 a barrel. So it's been a lot of changes around here, and people are just trying to adapt. The government did implement something called the citizens account, where if you're a national, a Saudi national, you can apply for this account, and they have special criteria, and they would pay you a monthly salary from the government to help you to cover the increases in prices that you're facing. That affects specific people. Well, mostly you have to have earn less than around what $7,000 a month, and you have to have a lot of family members. Yeah, so the more family you have, the more you get, and it averages around a family can get around, I think it's about $500 a month.
So I'm confused, and I'm sure there was a lot of reaction like this, but if the government gets all of the oil money and they doubled the cost of the higher octane gasoline, then why do they also need all this tax money? I mean, that's an awful lot of change at once. Maybe they just want to rip the Band-Aid off, do everything at once, and then settle down?
I think, that's one of the reasons. There's been... with the current government here, movements have been too fast. The government has been pushing things very, very quickly. For example, the VAT itself, the actual setup of the VAT regulations only took like 4 months before implementation.
Wow.
And they only announced it like a year before implementation that they're going to do it.
I have a very quick question. You thought all of these were heavy mistakes and the government is going down a terrible path, could you say that?
Yes, I do agree. Yeah, I think I think it's a bad idea.
Okay.
Right. I personally think it's a bad idea. Oh, I do say it on occasion. I just to a limit.
Okay. So you think, but you don't think those are good measures to take? Because to me, the big worry that I always have about the countries in the Gulf is at some point the oil is going to run out, and what do you do then, right? Economically, it's going to be really hard. It seems to me, I understand the complaining,
concept,
but
I don't have a problem with the concept per se. Mm. I agree with the concept itself. I just don't think it's being done in the right way. Mm. I don't think it's done systematically correct. I don't think time frame wise it's being done correct. It's just too fast, and I think it's too messy.
Okay.
That's one of the problems.
To do things quickly, though, to get people, people get outraged once as opposed to continually getting outraged?
No, but you end up with a very confused, incomplete regulations because you went so fast, because you haven't took into everything into account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Most countries in the world, when they're introducing sales tax or VAT, it usually takes them 3 to 5 years before the final law is clear and regulations are issued, because they go and revise it multiple times.
So why are they going so fast? Is it not to make sure that people don't complain so much that it's impossible to implement?
That could be one of the reasons. I think the other reason was the low oil prices. It was kind of hurting, so they just wanted to get quickly before they start hurting financially. So. Mm. That's another reason. And I think they did. And in some cases, they decided not to back down at the last moment when oil prices increased, because they didn't want people to think they will back down at every moment and everything. Although the government has backed down from a few things that they were planning to do. Mm. For example, the no raises were to be issued to government employees this year. And they decided, no, we're going to issue the raises, salary raises. So some things they backed down, some things they decided to move forward. And it really comes down, they figured out which one should work and shouldn't.
Okay.
So it's a new year. It's a new Saudi Arabia in a way.
Remember the thing I heard you say about Saudi Arabia that really blew me away was when said that concerts had become legal.
That what
and
had
then
become legal?
The next musical concerts had become legal.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of those now.
And have they made it legal for women to attend yet?
Oh yes, yes, women do attend concerts, and we have movie theaters. Yeah, and movie theaters are going to be opening, I think, in a month or two, and so on. So.
How's the religious authorities dealing with all of this? Because I'm guessing they were the ones saying...
The official one or the non-official one?
Well, let's go with both.
Official one are going along, of course. Mm. The unofficial ones are very extremely pissed.
When you say unofficial one, you mean the same people but unofficially are pissed, or the other people that are not working with the government are pissed?
Not as many of the ones who are working in the government. Some of the ones who are working in government and officially are pissed, but officially are okay. Mm. But mostly the ones who are not working for the government, religious leaders and so on, who are independent, are really not feeling it at the moment. So the religious authorities is feeling something.
Okay.
Have women started to drive yet? Or is that just still coming?
No, it's still coming. I think officially they should start driving in June or July.
Okay.
I believe. That's
that
when
a lot of change in one country inside of a couple of years, isn't it?
Exactly. That's the problem I'm having. That's too much change in too short of a time. Things should move a lot. I don't want them to move to very extremely slow. I just need a moderate pace.
Mm. And is there a fear that you're going to have a blowback on all of those changes?
There is some people who feel that there might be a blowback, and it really comes down to what future changes are going to happen and so on. it might happen. You might get a blowback. You might not. Nobody really knows. And it's really confusing for some people here.
Mm. All right. Well, I would like to finish this episode by saying that there is a sentiment in some portions of, okay, I'm talking about the US. A lot of people despise the government so much that they think, you know, they have this sentiment that it should be out of everything, and it translates into the government can't do anything, and so whatever, we can put anyone, it doesn't really matter, and they're monkeys anyway. And I think it's pretty clear when you look at things around the world and a little bit intelligently that governments are intricate machines, and you need people who know what they're doing to be in there, even if it's obviously going to be a frustrating time for everyone because the things don't work as well as you would want, and you're going to have some corruptions everywhere. It's kind of like you have racists in the country. No matter what you do, you're going to have people that are racists. Well, in the government, you're going to have some people that are corrupted or that do things that you disapprove of. So pointing to them and saying, so see, governments are crap, is a very dangerous path to go down. And I think if I take the, geostationary view of the US, I think that's what's been happening. People think that governments are crap. And this is why they're electing people that aren't qualified, that aren't the boring, administrative person who has studied this, who was, Hillary or people like Hillary. Of course, they're boring, but they know what they're doing. And there are some of those in the Republican Party as well. And it makes me very sad that the show has turned into, and it's not even about the show, it's about people who think governments are, people who see the government the way they do in the U.S. And that's an incredibly dangerous path to go down.
Let me add to that, though, that I'm glad I live in a country where I'm allowed to say if I think it's crap.
Yeah, no,
I
obviously.
I don't fear for my life if I insult the president.
That's obviously, but it's almost like apples and oranges. That has nothing to do with anything.
No, you can live in a country where you think it's crap and you can't say anything.
Of course, but the fact that you can't, but you're sort of implying, well, at least we can live. I live in a country where we can say it. Of course, I'm not talking about that. I'm not. The fact that you can say it doesn't change the importance of having people who understand how government works in place, right?
Absolutely. But being able to say, being able to have the freedom of speech, and that's starting to get questioned whether we're allowed to have that. But having the freedom of speech allows us to discuss these ideas and start to find, where do we want the government to go? What do we want it to look like? What should our party look like? Should we have a third party? I mean, if you can't speak, you can't have these conversations, and you can't help improve it by voting for who you want to vote for.
Of course. I've been thinking a lot about order and chaos and the empire and the rebels and all of those implementations of basically strict authority versus freedom. And maybe that's a long conversation that we should have at another point, but there's something to be said about... I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there. But I think we look at the Empire in Star Wars as the winners. And the winners are the scrappy rebellion. And so we're casting a light on the Empire of Star Wars that is a little bit darker than it actually was. It because it happened, of course, in a galaxy far, far away. That's what I mean. I'm not saying the Empire is a good thing, but it's not as bad as we make it out to be. It's a very complicated path that I will go down one day. There is something really interesting in there. I think it's there's something there. And I think ultimate freedom is anarchy. And so wishing for a more centered organization is not the worst of things sometimes. Does that make sense? I don't know. I'm alluding to things and not explaining them.
I watch Star Trek, so.
All right. Fair enough.
How about a lighter note?
Sure. Please. Yes.
Saudi Arabia now has the largest camel festival in the region.
That I don't know if I can say the things that come to my mind because that might be insensitive.
Congratulations on that victory.
Yeah. Was there
a lot of countries fighting for it?
wait a minute. So the largest camel festival, in the world, and part of the camel festival, they have a camel pageant.
Ooh.
All right. And 12 camels have been disqualified from the beauty contest because their owners improved them with Botox.
Oh my God. Oh, that is epic. That is the most beautiful thing ever.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, you know what? It's not more, I don't know if, you know, dogs and pageant contests are having the same issues, but it's not more ridiculous than that, is it?
Do you pay for a dog about $1 million?
I'm sure some people do.
Patrick, I think it's clear you need to bring someone in with an opposing view to turkeys on this trip.
is that a common thing? Like, obviously, you still have people that leave a little bit more tribally.
So, camels are huge. We have a lot of people. Camels, like the prizes in this festival, total almost $57 million.
Oh my God.
Okay. Some people actually follow the camel pageant.
If you go right now to that area, you will find that area completely crowded and people spending millions and thousands of dollars. And it's not only a pageant, it's a festival. So they have camel racing, they have breeding, they have pageants, they have camel milk tasting, and
that's awesome. Okay. So is it like, I don't know, I have a hard time envisioning how it plays in a city like Riyadh. Like, do people make fun of it? I understand it's not in Riyadh. I understand. But I mean, what do you think of it in a city like Riyadh?
It depends on the person you talk to. You could talk to like someone like me and some of my friends, and they say, this is just stupid. And then you can go to, if you talk to a Bedouin guy, he would say, oh, yes, amazing. I want to go and see these camels.
So I think
it really comes down to who you talk to.
Yeah.
Even in the city.
To me, it seems like, maybe us thinking of people getting excited about tractors and agriculture equipment, and probably some people looking at us when we get excited about some new, storage technology or like new hard drives or SSD. And we're like, oh my God, look at this graphics card. It's so fast. And some people look at us and they're like, what are
those
geeks?
Exactly.
Well, you know what? Camel geeks, I'm sure, are fine people as well. And that is going to be it for our episode. I'm really glad we got to do this and we managed to do one before. Let me ask. Mon coeur? Comment ça va? Okay. We're still fine.
Okay, that's good.
But we're going to be closing the show. We're going to be probably not coming back until the end of next month, I'm guessing. We'll see how things go. But before we do that, can you guys tell us where we can find you on the internet, guys, guy and gal? Let's start with Turkey.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Turkey Albella, TurkeyAlbella.
Perfect. Thank you very much, sir. Allison, what about you?
You can find all my podcasts at podfeet.com. That's P-O-D-F-E-E-T.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at podfeet.
Excellent. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can find the show at frenchspin.com. You can also find the Patreon page at patreon.com/thefidesclub. And in case you don't know, you can support the show through Patreon, and you can find the link in the show notes. You just go there, create an account, decide how much you're going to be giving per episode, and that's it. You're done. You're contributing to this show. If you think we're bringing something to the world, maybe consider doing that. There are a few hundreds of you doing it already, and I am eternally grateful for your support. If you want to help us out another way, maybe talk to your friends about the show. Maybe let them know that it exists, that it might be worth listening to, and that sometimes we say things that are not completely useless, so it might be worth their time. I know my guests always say things that are incredibly useful. Me, not so much. So,
Thank you so much.
Exactly. I didn't want to name you to not embarrass you because you're so modest, but if you're going to say
No, I'm not.
thank you so much for listening. We will be back in a few weeks, and yeah, things are going to be interesting until then, at least for me, and I'm sure
congratulations
for
and good luck.
Well, it's not done yet, so, but thank you. All right, talk to you soon, everyone. Bye.